Chapter 11. Om. The wound smarted for a long time. Siddhartha took many travelers across the river who had a son or a daughter with them, and he could not see any of them without envying them, without thinking, "So many people possess this very great happiness. Why not I? Even wicked people, thieves and robbers, have children, love them, and are loved by them, except me." So childishly and illogically did he now reason, so much he had become like the ordinary people. He now regarded people in a different light than he had previously. Not very clever, not very proud, and therefore all the more warm, curious, and sympathetic. When he now took the usual kind of travelers across, businessmen, soldiers, and women, they no longer seemed alien to him as they once had. He did not understand or share their thoughts and views, but he shared with them life's urges and desires. Although he had reached a high stage of self-discipline and bore his last wound well, he now felt as if these ordinary people were his brothers. Their vanities, desires, and frivolities no longer seemed absurd to him. They had become understandable, lovable, and even worthy of respect. There was the blind love of a mother for her child, the blind foolish pride of a fond father for his only son, the blind eager strivings of a young vain woman for ornament and the admiration of men. All these little, simple, foolish, but tremendously strong, vital, passionate urges and desires no longer seemed trivial to Siddhartha. For their sake, he saw people live and do great things, travel, conduct wars, suffer, and endure immensely. And he loved them for it. He saw life, vitality, the indestructible, and Brahman in all of their desires and needs. These people were worthy of love and admiration in their blind loyalty, in their blind strength and tenacity. With the exception of one small thing, one tiny little thing, they lacked nothing that the sage and thinker had, and that was the consciousness of the unity of all life. And many a time Siddhartha even doubted whether this knowledge, this thought, was of such great value, whether it was not also perhaps the childish self-flattery of thinkers, who were perhaps only thinking children. The men of the world were equal to the thinkers in every other respect, and were often superior to them, just as animals in their tenacious, undeviating actions, in cases of necessity, may often seem superior to human beings. Within Siddhartha there slowly grew and ripened the knowledge of what wisdom really was and the goal of his long seeking. It was nothing but a preparation of the soul, a capacity, a secret art of thinking, feeling and breathing thoughts of unity at every moment of life. This thought matured in him slowly, and it was reflected in Vasudeva's old childlike face. Harmony, knowledge of the eternal perfection of the world, and unity. But the wound still smarted. Siddhartha thought yearningly and bitterly about his son, nursed his love and feeling of tenderness for him, let the pain gnaw at him, underwent all the follies of love. The flame did not extinguish itself. One day, when the wound was smarting terribly, Siddhartha rode across the river, consumed by longing, and got out of the boat with the purpose of going to the town to seek his son. The river flowed softly and gently. It was in the dry season, but its voice rang out strangely. It was laughing. It was distinctly laughing. The river was laughing clearly and merrily at the old ferryman. Siddhartha stood still. He bent over the water in order to hear better. He saw his face reflected in the quietly moving water, and there was something in this reflection that reminded him of something he had forgotten, and when he reflected on it, he remembered. His face resembled that of another person, whom he had once known and loved and even feared. He resembled the face of his father, the Brahmin. He remembered how once, as a youth, he had compelled his father to let him go and join the ascetics. How he had taken leave of him, how he had gone and never returned. Had not his father also suffered the same pain that he was now suffering for his son? Had not his father died long ago, alone, without having seen his son again? Did he not expect the same fate? Was it not a comedy, a strange and stupid thing, this repetition, this course of events in a faithful circle? The river laughed. Yes, that was how it was. Everything that was not suffered to the end and finally concluded recurred, and the same sorrows were undergone. Siddhartha climbed into the boat again and rowed back to the hut, thinking of his father, thinking of his son, laughed at the river, in conflict with himself, verging on desire, and no less inclined to laugh aloud at himself and the whole world. The wound still smarted. He still rebelled against his fate. There was still no serenity in conquest of his suffering. Yet he was hopeful, and when he returned to the hut, he was filled with an unconquerable desire to confess to Vasudeva, to disclose everything, to tell everything to the man who knew the art of listening. Vasudeva sat in the hut weaving a basket. He no longer worked the ferry boat. His eyes were becoming weak, also his arms and legs, but unchanged and radiant were the happiness and the serene well-being of his face. Siddhartha sat down beside the old man and slowly began to speak. He told him now what he had never mentioned before, how he had gone to the town that time, of his smarting wound, of his envy at the sight of happy fathers, of his knowledge of the folly of such feelings, of his hopeless struggle with himself. He mentioned everything, he could tell him everything. Even the most painful things, he could disclose everything. He displayed his wound, told him of his flight that day, how he had rowed across the river with the object of wandering into the town, and how the river had laughed. As he went on speaking and Vasudeva listened to him with a serene face, Siddhartha was more keenly aware than ever of Vasudeva's attentiveness. He felt his troubles, his anxieties, and his secret hopes flow across to him and then return again. Disclosing his wound to this listener was the same as bathing in it, in the river, until he became cool and one with the river. As he went on talking and confessing, Siddhartha felt more and more that this was no longer Vasudeva. He no longer a man who was listening to him. He felt that his motionless listener was absorbing his confession as a tree absorbs the rain, that this motionless man was the river itself, that he was God himself, that he was eternity himself. As Siddhartha stopped thinking about himself and his wound, this recognition of the change in Vasudeva possessed him, and the more he realized it, the less strange did he find it. The more did he realize that everything was natural and in order, that Vasudeva had long ago almost always been like that, only he did not quite recognize it. Indeed, he himself was hardly different from him. He felt that he now regarded Vasudeva as the people regarded the gods, and that this could not last. Inwardly, he began to take leave of Vasudeva. In the meantime, he went on talking. When he had finished talking, Vasudeva directed his somewhat weakened glance at him. He did not speak, but his face silently radiated love and serenity, understanding and knowledge. He took Siddhartha's hand, led him to the seat on the riverbank, sat down beside him, and smiled at the river. "You have heard it laugh," he said, "but you have not heard everything. Let us listen. You will hear more." They listened. The many-voiced song of the river echoed softly. Siddhartha looked into the river and saw many pictures of the flowing water. He saw his father, lonely, mourning for his son. He saw himself, lonely, also with the bonds of longing for his faraway son. He saw his son, also lonely, the boy eagerly advancing along the burning path of life's desires, each one concentrating on his goal, each one obsessed by his goal, each one suffering. The river's voice was sorrowful. It sang with yearning and sadness, flowing towards its goal. "Do you hear?" asked Vasudeva's mute glance. Siddhartha nodded. "Listen better," whispered Vasudeva. Siddhartha tried to listen. The picture of his father, his own picture, and the picture of his son all flowed into each other. Kamala's picture also appeared and flowed on, and the picture of Govinda and others emerged and passed on. They all became part of the river. It was the goal of all of them, yearning, desiring, offering, suffering, and the river's voice was full of longing, full of smarting woe, full of insatiable desire. The river flowed on toward its goal. Siddhartha saw the river hasten, made up of himself and his relatives and all the people he had ever seen. All the waves and water hastened, suffering, towards goals, many goals, to the waterfall, to the sea, to the current, to the ocean, and all goals were reached, and each one was succeeded by another. The water changed to vapor and rose, became rain and came down again, became spring, brook, and river, changed anew, flowed anew. But the yearning voice had altered. It still echoed sorrowfully, searchingly, but other voices accompanied it, voices of pleasure and sorrow, good and evil voices, laughing and lamenting voices, hundreds of voices, thousands of voices. Siddhartha listened. He was now listening intently, completely absorbed, quite empty, taking in everything. He felt that he had now completely learned the art of listening. He had often heard all this before, all these numerous voices in the river, but today they sounded different. He could no longer distinguish the different voices, the merry voice from the weeping voice, the childish voice from the manly voice. They all belonged to each other. The lament of those who yearn, the laughter of the wise, the cry of indignation, and the groan of dying. They were all interwoven and interlocked, entwined in a thousand ways. and all the voices, all the goals, all the yearnings, all the sorrows, all the pleasures, all the good and evil, all of them together was the world. All of them together was the stream of events, the music of life. When Siddhartha listened attentively to this river, to this song of a thousand voices, when he did not listen to the sorrow or laughter, when he did not bind his soul to any one particular voice and absorb it in his self, but heard them all, the whole, the unity, then the great song of a thousand voices consisted of one word, Om, perfection. Do you hear? Asked Vasudeva's glance once again. Vasudeva's smile was radiant. It hovered brightly in all the wrinkles of his old face, as the Om hovered over the voices of the river. His smile was radiant as he looked at his friend, and how the same smile appeared on Siddhartha's face. His wound was healing, his pain was dispersing. His self had emerged into unity. From that hour, Siddhartha ceased to fight against his destiny. There shone in his face the serenity of knowledge, of one who is no longer confronted with conflict of desires, who has found salvation, who is in harmony with the stream of events, with the stream of life, full of symphony and compassion, surrendering himself to the stream, belonging to the unity of things. As Vasudeva rose from the seat of the riverbank, when he looked into Siddhartha's eyes and saw the serenity of knowledge shining in them, he touched his shoulder and gently, in his kind protective way, and said, I have waited for this hour, my friend. Now that it has arrived, let me go. I have been Vasudeva, the ferryman, for a long time. Now it is over. Farewell, hut. Farewell, river. Farewell, Siddhartha. Siddhartha bowed low before the departing man. I knew it, he said softly. Are you going into the woods? Yes, I'm going into the woods. I'm going into the unity of all things, said Vasudeva, radiant. And so he went away. Siddhartha watched him. With great joy and gravity, he watched him, saw his steps full of peace, his face glowing, his form full of light.